On the line now, I do have Fintan Lawler, solicitor with Lawler and Partners. Hello, Fintan, how are you?
Good morning, Noel.
I don't know what happened there. Well. The gremlins again.
Gremlins.
Yeah, so busy again after going into the new year?
Into the new year, back in full swing now, Noel. It takes a little while to get going, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, I think we're at the 19th of January, so I think the time for wishing people a happy new year is over.
It is, yeah.
Back down to business, as they say.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get down to business ourselves, and I'll give you the first question. I've recently been left a house from my grandparents' estate, and I was just wondering what the process is of changing it over from my grandparents' names to my own. Now, there's no mortgage on the house, and I've been living with my grandparents for the past number of years.
Okay, that's an interesting one, Noel, because she has been living with her grandparents for the last number of years. There could be a tax benefit to that. Because the threshold, as we've discussed before, is from parent to child, you can inherit €310,000 without paying tax. But when it goes to a grandparent, you can only inherit €32,000 without paying tax.
That's a big difference, yeah.
It's a massive difference. And after you go past that threshold rate, the rate is 33% of the balance, which is quite a high tax rate, obviously, particularly for a house. So the listener there would need to get specialised advice because they have been living with their grandmother for 6 years, or the grandparents for 6 years, because that will make a difference to the tax implication of their inheritance. Separate to that, the legal process involved in transferring the house is fairly straightforward when you get over the grant of probate. So we've discussed this before on the show and all, whereby when you need to administer somebody's estate, you need to ensure that you have a grant of probate.
Mm-hmm.
And in very simple terms, what a grant of probate is, it's the probate office is here in Smithfield in Dublin 7, close to the office. But it's an application that goes into the state, and it's the probate office on behalf of the state, to say that somebody's affairs are in order. And what that means is that you're setting out who the deceased is, what assets and liabilities they have. It'll also set out the beneficiaries, so the revenue commissioners will be familiar with whether or not there's tax to be paid.
Mm-hmm.
By way of example, I've had this experience before where somebody has claimed a non-contributing pension, which is means-tested, and they highlight that they don't own an awful lot, and then they get the pension. And it transpires on that, once the application goes in for the grant of probate,
mm-hmm.
that in fact they had more assets than the state realised they did have, and the state looked to claim back some of the pension that they may pay to that individual when they were alive.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a catch-all like that. Talking a hypothetical base and say that somebody was claiming social welfare benefit when they shouldn't be, it was means tested, and they realised that this person had three properties that they didn't realise, that'll get caught because they have to put down their tax number. In the event that they're claiming, as I say, a non-contrib pension, that will get caught. In the event that they have beneficiaries there, their tax numbers will also go down, that will get caught. So all of that is kind of a tidying up of one's affairs from an assets and a liability and a tax point of view with the state, and they issue them what's called a grant of probate. And that grant of probate entitles the executors, and the executors are the people named in the will to administer the estate, to then deal with the affairs of the deceased.
Okay.
So if you were to go into a bank, Noel, and say, my dad passed away and I want to take out €30,000 from his bank account, the bank official will say to you, I can't give that to you, Noel, because I don't have a grant of probate. And you'll say, but I have a death certificate here showing that he died. And they say, you're right, that does show he dies, but it doesn't show that you're the person entitled to get the money and deal with the affairs. I need a grant of probate from the probate office showing me that the executor in the will is and that they have the grant of probate. But once you get the grant of probate, then it's a matter of filling in certain documents. It's called a deed of assent. And that then goes into the property registration authority to complete the registration of the change of ownership.
Okay.
It's a certain process to it, but step one is probate office, step two, property registration authority, step three then is the change of registration.
Okay. It can be quite complicated in that. You'd imagine looking at that question, it's fairly straightforward. But when you get into the nitty gritty, it can be quite complicated. And I didn't know there, for instance, that because I was going to ask if a grandchild is not living in the house and the grandparents going to leave the house to her, the process of that. Obviously, if she's been living there for over 6 years, then the tax benefits there are much, much better. I didn't realise that as well.
And just on the point, though, because I did have this experience with somebody before in East Wall, and it was a granddaughter living with a grandmother, And in that circumstance, the granny hadn't done a will.
Mm-hmm.
But the granddaughter said to me, it's okay, my granny told me I'm going to get the house, that it's coming to me, so everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it's not okay, because if the granny dies and hasn't made a will, the rules of intestacy, which means if somebody hasn't made a will, they die intestate, and the rules attaching to that mean that the grandmother's brothers and sisters, who are alive at the date of her death, will take her estate in equal shares.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter that the grandmother wanted the granddaughter to have it. If she hasn't done a will to that effect, the granddaughter won't get it.
Okay. Yes, I've heard of cases, sad cases where that sort of happened. I suppose this is a good time, before we go into any more questions, Fintan, it'd be a good time, I suppose, beginning of the year, and maybe someone hasn't renewed a will in a long, long time or thought about it. It's time to maybe sort of reflect and think, okay, maybe I need to change things in my will. You know,
it's a great time for New Year's resolutions and new chapters and new beginnings, mm-hmm. as you know, and I recommend strongly to anybody who has done a will or hasn't done a will that they simply put it on their list mm-hmm. of things to do, and maybe put a deadline of trying to do it by Easter, which is the 1st of April this year, because if you put it on a list and it sits there for the year, you'll never get to it. Mm-hmm. Give yourself a deadline. And if you've done a will, check it. Because what happened before, Noel, I think we spoke about this indeed, is that the threshold for a parent to child used to be in the region of €450,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the tax thereafter used to be 20%. Now, if I can talk, and sometimes it can be difficult to try and get a handle on figures, but let's pick a house at 600,000 or an estate at 600,000.
Mm-hmm.
And let's talk hypothetically about one child. If a parent made a will when the threshold was 450 and the tax rate was 20%, it means that they made a will on the premise that, okay, my daughter or son is going to get $450,000 exempt from tax. They have to pay 20% tax on $150,000, which is €30,000. That's okay. I can live with that. And they have made a will on the understanding that there's going to be a tax liability of €30,000, and
yeah.
It's okay. What's happened since they've made that will is two things have changed. First of all, the threshold has dropped to $310,000, and the tax rate has increased from 20% to 33%. So taking the same set of facts, and we won't change the value. The value is now still 600,000, but the threshold has dropped to 310, which means you're being taxed on 290,000. And the tax rate has increased to 33%, which is somewhere in the region of 95 to 100,000 euros.
Wow, that's a big difference.
It's a massive difference for somebody who thinks it's okay, I'm happy enough to pay 30,000 euros in tax, not realising that the tax bill that's going to accrue is actually closer to 100,000 euros.
Yeah, yeah. And how liberal are they, Fintan, for instance? If say I was living with a family in rented accommodation for the average 1,200-1,400 a month, and the parent alive, and then the parent dies and they leave me the house and all the provisions you've talked about there, and I move into it, what sort of liberal, how liberal are they with me paying this 100 grand back?
I don't really know. I mean, it's a debt that accrues on the estate, and that's why we went up to 450, because this mm-hmm. kind of happened 10, 12 years ago when the property prices had increased to such a level that you may have some people living in a house worth €1 million. The parent dies, the child inherits, and the child then has to sell their family home in order to pay the tax bill.
Mm-hmm.
But the tax has to be paid. Now, you can certainly negotiate with the revenue and talk to the revenue, but, I mean, they won't be giving you a deduction on it. They might give you a little bit of leeway in relation to organising finance, taking out a car loan, taking out maybe a mortgage on the premises, something mm-hmm. like that, maybe even selling the premises. So there'll be a little latitude there. But, I mean, they can't turn around and say, well, you owe us €100,000, we'll take 60. Because they don't have that flexibility, and if they did, everybody would be looking to negotiate with them, and it wouldn't be fair then to the state if they weren't recovering money
mm-hmm.
From one person and not from another.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There is no negotiation on it. There are certainly some tricks and traps that people should look into when they're preparing their will,
mm-hmm.
which is a favourite nephew relief or a favourite grandchild relief or a grandchild living in the house or little things like that. So it's called effective tax planning. And if people are getting to a certain age, and when I say a certain age, I'm thinking kind of anything over 65 should be looking at effective tax planning.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean they have to do it, but it means they're aware of it. Because you don't want a situation, no, where somebody comes to 72 or 73 years of age, oh, I must do my will now and start getting my affairs in order. And it doesn't mean that they're unwell, but they just decide to do it at that stage
mm-hmm.
and realise that they had to have done it 3 or 4 years previously, or that it has to be ongoing for a period of 5, 6, 7 years. So it's just to have the information is no load to carry, and it can be a huge benefit to individuals. There's a great peace of mind as well, Noel, in relation to getting these issues sorted out and having your affairs in order. Just in case anything does happen, at least you have that peace of mind, rather than it being a black cloud there in the background going, oh, I really need to sort that out. I must get to that sometime soon. So my advice is certainly sort it out soon. And if you've done it already, just reflect on it, just review it.
Yeah, have a revision.
People say, well, I give it to my four children in equal shares, and that's okay, and they did that 10 years ago, but circumstances have changed the last decade for those four children. Maybe it shouldn't be in equal shares. Maybe somebody has got married. Maybe somebody hasn't. Maybe there's a grandchild now they'd like to make provision for. Maybe there's not. But, I mean, as you know, life changes and changes on a regular basis. So, I mean, if I can take an example of a mobile phone, and we can see all how the mobile phones have changed in the last decade.
So quickly,
like,
yeah.
Why would you change your mobile phone on a regular basis and leave a very important thing like your affairs or a will the same as it was 10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah. So that's good advice for the new year. Even though it's, 18, 90 days into it, take a look at your will and see if it needs to be revised. And have a chat with your solicitor, so there's no doubt about that. The next question is to do with property as well. I've sold my house with an auctioneer, and the deposit has been paid. But now my neighbour has approached me to say he wants to buy it for his daughter. He's agreed to give me 5,000 more than the agreed price. Can I accept it? And do I have to pay the auctioneer? That's
there's an interesting word there, which is I have sold my house with an auctioneer.
Yeah, yeah.
And a deposit has been paid. So it depends really on what stage it's at, Noel. There's two types of deposit that are paid when you're buying a house. The first deposit is called a booking deposit, and that is 100% refundable to the individual. So if they put down a booking deposit, it's normally in the region of 5,000 to 10,000 euros, and they place that with the auctioneer, and it's a sign of their good intention to buy the property. At that stage, the contract's issued out from the vendor solicitor to the purchaser solicitor. The purchaser solicitor will check the title. If that's in order, then they're in a position to sign contracts. In the meantime, the purchaser will finalise their loan approval and their loan documents, and if that comes through, at that stage then they sign the contract and they pay the balance deposit. Now, once they pay the balance deposit, they're bound into a contract. You can't then get the balance deposit back. So if this particular property is at a booking deposit stage, which is the sign of the good intention to proceed, they can still deal with the interested neighbour. If it's a balance deposit paid and the contracts are signed, it's going to be a little bit trickier for them. Now, just to be very technical about this, if a purchaser signs a contract and sends it back with the deposit, and the vendor doesn't sign the contract, well, then there's no contract in existence.
Okay.
The contract has to be signed by both parties. So technically speaking, if the purchaser in this instance has sent back contracts to the vendor with the deposit and the balance deposit, and the vendor changes his mind, he's still okay to do that. If the vendor signs the contract, it's then too late.
Okay.
They're bound into a contract, they've signed that paperwork, they're contractually bound to sell the house to the purchaser.
Okay.
The second part of the question he asked, should I pay the fees, or do I have to pay the fees to the auctioneers? I think probably morally and ethically they have to, because the auctioneer has put the property on the market, they've secured a purchaser, they've accepted a deposit, and they've done their job. So I think they're entitled to be paid. If it was a situation that the auctioneer put up a sign on a Friday evening and on a Saturday morning the neighbour crossed the road and knocked on the door and said, Gene, I'm really sorry, I didn't realise you were selling your house, I would like to buy it. In those circumstances, you probably would be able to have a different conversation with the auctioneer, which is, listen, I know your sign went up and you have to pay some money, but there was no viewings. You didn't have to come through the house. You didn't have to sell the house. You didn't have to find a purchaser. I found a purchaser myself. Now, the argument that they will meet, Noel, is you found a purchaser because I put up the sign. If I didn't put up the sign, you wouldn't have found a purchaser. But to be fair to everybody, they wouldn't have done the level of work in that circumstance where the purchaser approached in a day or two with a sign going up, as they seem to have done in the listener's question, which is they've gone through a process, they've secured a purchaser, they've secured a deposit and whatnot. So the short answer is if no contract signed, they can certainly deal with somebody else at the higher price. but I think that they're probably obliged to pay the auctioneer.
Okay, as always, the devil is in the detail, isn't it? Just mention when you said, like, you put up the sign but didn't do anything else, but then he said, well, you wouldn't have got the sale, the neighbour wouldn't have seen it. Yeah, very good. Devil is in the detail.
Yeah, there you have it.
Okay, now the last one is to do with employment. I was recently let go from my job of 6 months. I had an accident where I badly hurt my knee and I had to take some time off to rest. But when I returned to work, the managers were very icy towards me. And a few weeks later, I was called into the office to be told they were letting me go once my probation period was finished. Excuse the pun, but they will have a leg to stand on. I feel like I was dismissed because I had an accident and had to take some time off because of it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I like the pun that I have that leg to stand on. Mm-hmm. I suppose the probation period, no, is what a lot of employers are doing with their employees at the moment, and that's just to make sure that they each get a feel for each other insofar as it may not suit the employee, the particular job, or it may not suit the employer, that the employee's level of attention to detail. And what can very often happen is that, as we know the old expression, that paper doesn't refuse ink. And you can have a circumstance where somebody might complete their CV and it might look absolutely fantastic and they say they have experience on this and they've experience in Microsoft and they're IT compliant and they're an IT expert. And then when they get actually into the working environment, you realise that all is not as it seems or as it seemed to be on the CV. So that's the probation period, that they allow themselves a probation period to say, I don't think that you're properly representing or reflecting what your CV is, you can do, you actually can't really do. And they're entitled then to let somebody go at the end of a probation period. Mm-hmm. I don't honestly know whether they're letting this person go because of a leg injury or because of the time off work or because the person wasn't up to the standard that they expected him or her to be at. But unfortunately, she doesn't actually have a leg to stand on. The probation period is the probation period and they're entitled to let her go at the end of that mm-hmm. without any recourse.
Okay. That's short and sweet and concise, and the answer there is well answered. Incidentally, I was just thinking, a lot of places now, I don't know what way the law would stand with the zero hours that are out there now with people. People have just been taken on. They've a few hours here and a few hours there. Maybe, I don't know, a probation period.
I think they're tightening up on that, or they're looking to tighten up on it. It's very unfair to people, really. I mean, they should have a more job security than that. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? You're here this week and you're gone next week and you're back the following week. Like, it's not fair, mm-hmm. particularly where somebody's looking to buy a house. They have to show a proven track record of saving. They have to show wages going in every week. If they want to make plans or arrangements in relation to holidays or in relation to schooling or in relation to midterm breaks with children or something like that, like, mm-hmm. it's not fair. You should just turn around and say, listen, I'm taking you on for 3 months. I have 3 months work, and then after that I won't have any more, and we can review it then. But this week on, week off stuff, I think is very unfair to people.
It doesn't give people much of a chance to be able to sort of plan things out and know where they stand, because with the way things are. But anyway, that's, as I say, all answered very well. And it goes to show you that life could be complicated if you don't sort of make plans and that sort of thing, especially to do with houses and wills and that. So again, we'll sort of remind people to revise their will if they've made one, and if they haven't, to really think about getting it, because it makes life less complicated after death. I mean, that sounds contradictory, but ironic as well.
It makes life an awful lot complicated, but it also gives them control, Noel, in relation to what they want to happen. And by that I mean, if somebody has a neighbour who takes out the bins when they're away down the country or go on their holidays, like, give a few bob to that the neighbour. Give mm-hmm. them 1,000 euros as a travel voucher to go off for a weekend or a break. Mm-hmm. If you want to get some masses said in the local church, well, then you can organise that. If you have a godchild or a favourite nephew or niece, you can make provision for those people. So mm-hmm. you've just control in relation to your own money and where it's going and what's going to happen to it. And very often I encourage people to write down their funeral instructions at the same time as making a will, so that they can be cremated, or that they can be buried, or they can have different songs sung at the wedding or, mm-hmm. or the funeral rather, or not, as the case may be. But it gives somebody some visibility in relation to what the deceased wanted. And it's particularly relevant, I think, Noel, in circumstances where somebody is taken suddenly and either by way of a tragic circumstance of a car accident or something, a heart attack or something like that, or even you pass away peacefully in their sleep, mm. but next thing, everybody's standing scratching their heads going, well, what would Mammy have wanted?
Yes, indeed.
And somebody said, well, I think Mammy would have wanted to be cremated. And the other person said, absolutely not. I know that Mammy would have been like to be buried out in St. Fintan's in Sutton overlooking the bay. And there's a family dispute and you know, just kicking off immediately.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, so, well, as I said, I'm sure there's lots of people now sitting at home that over the years have sat down and thought about it and never did anything about it. So put your intentions on paper. That's what I say. And go see your solicitor. So, by the way, give us our talking about solicitors, your website again, Fintan?
Yeah, the website, Noel, is www.lawlerpartners.ie if anybody wants to go onto it. And we're here in Smithfield in Dublin 7 next to the forecourt.
Okay, listen, thanks very much, and I'll talk to you in a few weeks' time. Always great, and welcome back, Fintan.
Thanks, Noel. Good to talk to you.
See you. Bye.
Take care now.
Bye bye.